Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show.
Ah, the indomitable Pink Floyd and Money. I'm playing that show since 2005. Thanks for joining me today. This show is about money, as money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. It controls our economy, our country, our planet, and some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money or lack of it or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. So on occasion, we do investing in community discussions. And today is one of those days where we're going to start out. And I'd like to welcome to the show Executive Director of the Miners Foundry right across the street here in Spring Street in Nevada City, Ms. Gretchel Hummel-Bond. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, let me get you on
afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, the Miners Foundry, you know, I've been there a lot. Probably people wonder what it is. So I guess we could start is, what is the Miners Foundry?
Well, it's obviously it's an iconic community cultural center in Nevada City, in downtown Nevada City. We serve all of Western Nevada County and beyond. It's a 160-year-old building. It's not owned by the city or county, which I think a lot of people think it is. We're actually a nonprofit organization, and we serve the community.
Okay, wow. Yeah, it's been there a long time. The inside is fairly old. Is it now, the Miners Foundry is run as a corporation, nonprofit? What is it?
It's a nonprofit. We're a nonprofit public benefit corporation.
Okay, and yeah. And since some people may not have been inside, the show has aired about 65 other stations that are all over the world, but everybody knows about the gold country and its history here. What is inside the Miners Foundry?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about how it even became the Miners Foundry, very briefly. It was a foundry. It served the mines in Nevada County, which is one of the reasons why Nevada City was such a wealthy gold mining community, actually the wealthiest in the state of California. Mm-hmm. And then in the 70s, it became a cultural center called the American Victorian Museum. And then in 1989, it was renamed the Miners Foundry Cultural Center. And what's inside the building is a theater. We have a flat floor, dance floor. I don't know if you've been in there dancing before, but it's a wonderful wooden dance floor that's makes it really nice to dance.
Right.
And we have a gorgeous stone hall that was part of the very original building. The theater part of the building was added in the 30s. And the stone hall is the original, you know, was built in 1859.
Sure.
And that's where people a lot of times have private parties, mm-hmm. or weddings or events. We do theater by the book there. You know, it's not necessarily everything doesn't happen in the theater. And then we have an upper gallery area and a foyer. So it's about 9,500 square feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's three levels. I know there's the stone hall where this station has its broadcasters meetings.
Right.
Then there's the main stage where there is a big floor that must be, I don't know, a couple thousand square feet
floor. It's a little under 3,000 square feet. And mm-hmm. then we have a, you know, professional sound and lighting. We have some pretty awesome sound and lighting in there.
Okay, and then there's that upper level. Now, that upper level to me looked like it was originally a stage where people would perform for the lower floor, or no?
So that Foothill Theater Company did uh-huh. use that as their backstage area, and there was a stage that came off of it into the what was then called the Great Hall. Mm-hmm. And so we turned the room when we put the new stage in, and which is logical to have it go the longest way, not the widest way.
Sure. And so what sort of events do you hold there? Or are there any events that you won't hold there?
Actually, there's probably nothing that doesn't happen at the Foundry.
Really?
I mean, we like to say that it can take you from birth to death and all of the life celebrations in between. I mean, it really truly is an amazing community cultural center.
Sure. I'm speaking to the executive director, Gretchen Hummel-Bond, of the Miners Foundry across the street here on Spring Street. A wonderful, wonderful old building. Has a kitchen in there, right? I've seen the kitchen.
Yep, we have a catering kitchen. It's a licensed kitchen. And when people come in and have events and they have caterers that use the kitchen, everybody seems to be pretty happy with it.
Is it a historical landmark?
It's a state registered historic landmark, okay. And it's also in the registered historic downtown Nevada City. We're inside the boundaries of the historic district as well.
Now, that when the tourists come up, they just can't get a tour and walk in, right? You have to actually...
No, they actually... Well, the building's open.
It is open.
It is open. Okay. And people can come in anytime, and I'm happy to give people a tour anytime. I often just happen upon people, and they're looking around at our artifacts, because we do have artifacts there, because we are also a museum. And part of our mission is to preserve Nevada County history. Mm-hmm. And... I'm happy to give anybody a tour. I love giving people tours. It's okay. Fun.
And there's plenty of parking. I know.
There's plenty of parking. As long as all the KVMR DJs don't park.
Never done that before.
Oh, no.
And we did actually an Investing Community and a promotional video. We just did one for Art in the Garden, which is coming up on Sunday from 3 to 5. So that video is hitting the airways now. So
I saw it, as a matter of fact.
Thank you. And so what are the other events that are upcoming that you might want people to be aware of?
So, well, I definitely want people to be aware of the Foundry Sings, which is our second of four. It's a community sing-along.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to be experienced. As a matter of fact, I don't really like singing, and I was a little bit... I wasn't nervous. I was just like, I'm not going to sing.
Sure.
And then as soon as it started, I was like, oh, no, I have to sing. I have to get the lyrics and sing. So we had one in January, and this one is on April 11th at 5:30. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be doing the song Rocket Man. And Rod Baggett is leading the chorus, and he helps people find where their range is and divides the group up. And it's actually a remarkable experience. Mm-hmm. And it... so it's at 5:30 next Wednesday.
Is it just one song?
Yeah, it's one
song.
So
you work on like an hour and a half on one song, and then finally...
Yeah, that makes it sound really awful and long.
No, actually, that'd be kind of fun because everybody finds their spot, and then the final pretty. So you actually must like sing a couple of times to get the best.
Definitely, and it's going to get... And we're videotaping it. We videotaped the last one, and it's going to be put up on YouTube.
Okay.
And it is a delightful... It is such a fun experience. I really can't say enough about how fun that was.
Is that an annual event?
We're doing it four times a year.
For maybe Jen and I will come down there and film that then. That might be an interesting addition for the Investing Community Film Series.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
Great. And you take support, volunteers, donations. What do you look for in the community?
Do you mean for this particular event?
Just overall.
Oh, well, because we're we're a nonprofit and a historic building, we definitely look to the community for support for the Foundry. And there are a lot of different ways that they can do that. And they can visit our website, which is www.minersfoundry.org. Or they can call me and talk to me about it if they're interested in supporting us.
And we are speaking to Gretchen Hommel-Bond, the executive director of the Miners Foundry. What's the phone number, Gretchen?
It's 530-265-5040.
5040. And if somebody wanted to volunteer there and work there, is that possible for people
absolutely.
That kind of want to be surrounded by that sort of atmosphere?
Absolutely. That's another way that people can give to, can support the Foundry. And we're always looking for volunteers. We have lots of different types of opportunities for people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people have technical skills and they want to, volunteer for that. Because we do a lot of events, we need a lot of support, with events as far as like ticket taking and wristbanding and welcoming people to the venue. And then there's also, we have a board of directors, and if anybody's interested in being on the board, they can contact me as well.
All right. That number again is 530-265-5040, website minersfoundry.org. Gretchen, I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much.
And I'll see you Sunday if I manage to make it down.
Yeah, right.
Okay. This is Gretchen Hommel-Bond, executive director of the Miners Foundry. We'll be right back to talk finance and money.
get back. I'm off my jack. Keep your hands off of my stack. Money, it's a hit. Don't get me back. Too good, good bullish. I'm in the
And welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today. So, locally, today, April 5th, 2018, year of our Lord, 12:24 p.m. You may be hearing the show at a different time in a different location in the next few days. But locally, we have kind of a storm coming in. It's supposed to be a very wet storm, a tropical-type storm with lots of rain, so be careful there, of course. Watch for flash flooding, and I would imagine probably some trees down and the rest. So here we are, Dow 30, floating around 24,576 as I speak, up 312. Today's show is entitled Double and Triple Bottoms. And I realize I said that in the beginning of every show, we always talk about these big Dow numbers. Now, there are many indexes that people follow, but the one that hits the news all the time is the Dow 30. It makes up 30 stocks of different proportions. They're not all equally proportioned in the Dow 30. And its high, oh, a couple months ago, was 26,616. And it had gone for a long time without a 5, albeit even a 10% correction. Since Trump got elected, it shot from 17,000 and change up to 26,000, 6,000 points, or 20-something percent increase. And then since 2010, it's almost been straight up with some minor setbacks here and there, but pretty much straight up. And so, you know, it was only a matter of time before we saw a correction, and we did. And it corrected about 10-something percent down to about somewhere in the area of 23,533, I believe, was what it hit, somewhere in there. And at that time, we said that it might have been looking like a technical event that is called a double bottom. I mean, a climax bottom. And then there's a double bottom and a triple bottom. There's also a climax top, a double top, and a triple top. So what is that? It's fancy names. But basically, a climax event, which some technicians believe is able to prognosticate future movements. Now, I will, you know, I'll preface that by saying there is no holy grail in predicting where the stock market will go. Certain people believe certain things, other people believe other things. But there are technicians that do believe in things like climax tops and climax bottoms. Now, what is a climax top and a climax bottom? Best described is, let's say we have a stock or even an index that has run up. And now, index usually don't run up straight lines. Occasionally they do, like you saw cryptocurrencies, but normally they stair step up. And I think you can visualize what that means. Stair step up and down, and slowly climb. And let's say on a particular stock, the average bounce intraday or inter couple of days intraday or even over the week or 2 weeks. Let's say the average movement might be in a particular stock. Let's say a stock's sitting at 80 and it moves $2 or $3 a day up or down, but slowly climbs upward. So its general range might be $2 or $3 in trading a day. So one day, if it's at 83, it might hit 81, it might hit 85, and then the next day it might be climbing again, and it'll have $2 or $3 swings or what have you. That's normal swings. So you think, okay, the stock maybe swings $2 or $3 in an average day, but it is constantly climbing, or an index like the Dow. And then what happens is a climax top would be that the amount that the stock moves in a day or in a couple of days or even over a week starts to bounce wildly. It starts to say and starts to, instead of move a $2 or $3 or $1 or $3, it starts bouncing $4 to $6 or $7 to $8. And as you see these, wow, it really went up today, and wow, it really went down today, and wow, it really went up tomorrow. But what's happening is if you look at it over a period of time, it's not going anywhere. It's just bouncing wildly and bouncing in a wider range than you would normally see it stair-step up. That can indicate this climax top. The stock climaxes by bouncing wildly, and it could indicate that there's a turn coming. And the same would come for a bottom. Let's say a stock or an index is dropping, and it drops $2 or $3 a day, and then rises a dollar, and then drops another three. Its normal bouncing range is $2 or $3. Or on a Dow index, its bouncing range is 50 to 150 points, or whatever the bounce range is. And then it starts bouncing wildly, okay? Really exaggerated bounces, prices up and prices down. But it basically stops falling. That we would say that may be an indication of a climax bottom. So on a Friday, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I'm not quite sure what day, the particular day that was, the Dow had been dropping rather violently. It was this drop, the first drop we saw, from 26,616 to 23,005 and change, wherever it ended, was pretty brutal. You know, it was pretty violent. It was the largest single point Dow drop ever. You know, on a particular day, not the highest percentage point, not the highest percentage drop, but definitely. And it had, that particular day, it had almost 1,000-point swing. I think it was down 500, and then it was down 1550 on the Dow, and then it closed it down 1150, somewhere in there. So it's pretty wild. Anyway, on that Friday, which is significant when stocks do things and close on a Friday, it is believed to have more weight in investor perception. So on that particular Friday, the Dow was down 200 or 300 points, and then intraday it turned and rose 300, somewhere in that range. And we went on the show and we said that could be a climax bottom. That could be a climax bottom. And in our portfolios, we adjusted accordingly to what I believed. And the following Monday, and then the Dow started to run again. And everybody said, oh, okay, the fall is over. And then we came on the next show. I did some articles that were approved for publication that said that there was always a chance of a double bottom. So it started to run, and then it turned. And the first time it hit the bottom, it was around, I think it was 23,533. And it reversed and went down to 23,523. So if you look at it on a chart, the two areas where it fell look like a W. So it had hit 23,500 and some change twice. And then, which is bringing us up to current, then it started running again. So since it's 23,523, it's now at 24,535, up almost exactly 1,000 points from this second bottom. Now, that could be, and we look at these things in hindsight, you know, hindsight is 20/20, right? So we could make a triple bottom. A triple bottom would be that this thing runs maybe up to where it was before, which is right around here. You know, the first time it recovered from 23,005 and change, it went up 1,000 points and reversed and went down to 23,005 and change. And now it's at 24,005 and change. So we could be in for a triple bottom, which would be a W with an extra leg. So we would look at that. You know, we would say, oh, you know, it could reverse again down to 23,500. And then again, I'll preface it by saying no one can tell you which way the market's going to go. There are people that are better at it, but this is a social science. It's not a science like math where everything adds up and is perfect. So, or if this thing takes off from there, people will look back at this event and say, oh, that was a double bottom. It was a climax bottom and a double bottom at 23,005. So for those that believe this sort of thing, the fact that it was at 23,533 and went back to 23,523, that's close enough. People say, wow, that's almost a perfect double bottom. So to be a perfect triple bottom, it would have to go down back down again. But we don't know what it'll do. So that's the explanation of a double top, double bottom, and a climax event, climax top or climax bottom. So we have to be careful with that. And when we look at how these things go, you know, the technicians, the people that look at technical analysis, they look at a lot of charts. Then you have to realize that when they'll look at it in hindsight and say, see, what did I tell you? It works. And sometimes these double bottom, triple top bottom charts do look like they indeed fulfilled their prognostication of what it looks like. And so remember, technical analysts, they will look at a variety of things, but one of the things is look at a chart. And any investor or non-investor can look at a chart. I use yahoofinance.com, and then you plug in a symbol of the stock or the exchange-traded fund or the index you want to look at, and then it'll show a small chart on Yahoo Finance, and then it'll give you the option to look at it 3 months, 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, or infinitum if it's available. And by looking at that, you can see, you know, was there some sort of familiarity with the way the chart unfolded? Was there a double bottom, triple bottom? Was it straight up? Was it straight down? And normally, when we look at something that is straight up, a straight line up, such as a cryptocurrency chart, look at Bitcoin charts and you'll see a straight up line. And the real estate market in, 06, 07, 08 was straight up. Dot-com stocks, NASDAQ would be a good chart to look at too, you know, from 1996, 7, 8, 9 to 2001, before May 2001. That was straight up. And these straight up lines, you know, if you remember economics, I was an economics major, got a degree in economics in 1979. And so if you look at these things, you can say, yeah, you know, straight up charts were taught in economics that straight lines up are bad because nature abhors things going out of the average. I've always used the example as, you know, men don't get too fat, they die off. And they're not too many deer in the forest. They get too many deer in the forest and a disease will wipe them out, or predators will come in, or, you know, nature is kind of self-correcting. You know, there's an average temperature in an area, and if it gets too hot or too cold, you can pretty much count on the fact that it will be correcting. So nature does not like things going out of the average. And when you see a spiked line down or up, it takes you, it moves the averages, but it is definitely out of the averages. So straight up lines are usually indication, in at least in an asset class, of a bubble or a mania, which is where people just buy to buy on the greater fool theory, that if I buy it tomorrow, someone will pay more for it. If I buy it today, someone will pay more for it tomorrow. And I think there's a book called Bubbles, Crashes, and Manias. And there have been many, many, many throughout history. They go way, way back, you know, in the 1600s, I believe. Holland experienced a tulip bulb mania where people were paying a year or two worth of salary for a tulip bulb. Not to plant, but to resell. Some St. Augustine tulip bulb, I think, was one of the most expensive tulip bulbs. And, of course, the price for tulip bulbs skyrocketed and eventually crashed and wiped people out. And then there was the South Sea bubble. You know, there was a big a push in Europe to, you know, to finance maritime trips to explore the New World, and of course they sold stock in that. And then there was the French Insignat, if I'm pronouncing that right. And then there was mini bubbles, or bubbles in ostrich farms, emu oil, cryptocurrency, obviously, the dot-com bonds back in the 80s with the junk bond, Michael Milliken, and just onward and onward. And so you can find it. You know, real estate in Hawaii was in a bubble. Real estate in Texas years ago was in a bubble. So there are bubbles throughout history. And, you know, anytime you see everybody buying something just to make money in it, and everybody in the world, such as the people down at the coffee shop, are talking about it, and it's on the front of Time magazine, that usually, at least an indicator to me, in my opinion, is that things are going to be coming to an ugly end shortly. So the Dow from 2010 and 2011 had this ominous straight-up line. And, you know, I can always tell you, I've read a couple of articles just the last couple of days saying that the Dow is going to crash horribly. But, I could show you 10 more articles that said this Dow is going to go to 30,000 and more. So nobody knows. But when you read an article, you're convinced. I have people send me an article and say, look at this article I read. It says the Dow is going to 10,000. What do you think? I think, well, that's one of 100. And I could show you another 100 that will tell you the exact opposite. And I see them every day. I've got one guy that writes an article and he says that the Dow is going to crash. And I got another people that write an article, they said the Dow is going to skyrocket. So we look at fundamentals, and when this last market corrected, we have to realize that we hadn't had a 5 or 10% correction in the Dow index for a long time. So there are many that would believe it was due. A 5 or 10% correction is thought by many to be healthy. It wipes out the people that are in there that just speculating. It wipes out the dumb money, is what we say. And you know, it knocks down the froth. You know, it was always a reference that the real estate market was frothy, and the dot-com bubble was frothy. And so it knocks down the froth, and so the economy can start up again. Now, you know, it's in my opinion that the economic statistics are pretty good. Earnings are coming in pretty good. The tax cuts, Wall Street seems to like. Employment is there are certain areas of employment that are hitting, you know, recent, if not historical, all-time lows. And the one thing, the one mystery here is inflation. You know, the feds keep telling us there's no inflation. And I beg to differ with that, you know. In our portfolios, we have been structured for inflation, and I have been wrong. We have not seen a lot of inflation. I still believe that we will see inflation. And now the feds are finally waking up to, and people are finally waking up to, hey, maybe we are seeing inflation. So I think we will see inflation. It's just been subdued a lot longer than I thought it would. I mean, who would have thought that the feds would have printed $4 or $5 trillion and then also backstopped another $4 or $5 trillion in the financial sector, and you wouldn't see inflation? Normal economic theory says that if you create that much money, you're going to see inflation. Anytime you introduce money into a closed economy, that economy is going to generally experience currency reflected inflation. So remember, inflation is only applicable to the currency that you're using at the time. So you could say that the Mexican peso, people are familiar with that, you know, that's a tremendous inflation. And I always ask people, would you take your payment of your car if somebody wanted to buy your car in Mexican pesos? And everybody says, no. And I say, well, why? And a lot of people say, because it's not worth anything. Yes, the Mexican peso is worth something. It trades on the market. It's worth something. Sure it is. But their indication is that it's worth less or worthless. Two different words are worth less or worthless. It's because of historical precedent. You know, historically, they remember, you don't take pesos. So although we saw when the peso wouldn't buy much, that was inflation in things bought with the Mexican peso, the U.S. dollar did not experience that inflation. So inflation is only applicable to the currency that you're using, wherever you're using it. So you got to have inflation in one country, like the Mexican peso, while the other countries around it are fine. And so in the case of the United States, you know, we are the biggest dog on the block and we export our dollars. You know, the Mexican peso, you're not going to go to Switzerland and find anybody using Mexican pesos. But all over the world, you'll find people using U.S. dollars. So we have a very large economy, not here in the United States. You know, the biggest, China's number two. But we also export our dollars all over the place. A lot of people use them. And so we've had a lot, we have a much bigger pond to dump the concentrated money in before it starts diluting and diluting in the monetary environment I call as inflation. And so do I believe that there will be hyperinflation in the United States? You know, that's a tough question. I do believe we will see inflation, and I do believe it'll get more egregious than the Fed's plan on. But hyperinflation, you know, my opinion is we're not going to see that, at least, you know, until the very far future. There's a lot of tricks they can use. Eventually, the calculator's going to hit E. You know, if you keep looking at the amount of deficit the United States has and the money that it borrows and on top of the money that it prints and creates is the same thing. And at the rate they're doing it, you know, if you use your calculator and start hitting multiply, it'll eventually go to E. If you want to see a scary, scary website, go to U.S. Debt Clock or usdebt.org, one of those, and it'll show you in digital, in numbers that are rolling, how fast this budget is going underwater. It'll also show you revenues, but you'll see the amount of deficit, and it spins off millions of dollars as you sit there and watch it on how much we're spending that they're not taking in. It's amazing. So I think it's usdebt.org or US Debt Clock. Just Google up US Debt Clock and you'll see, you know, and then you'll see how fast we're actually spending money we don't have. And at some point, you know, the Piper's gonna come too, you know. So anyway, you're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. And we'll be right back to talk about something of interest to me, which is running a small business. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark Cuniberti. for a living and we're in the money. Well, we did a tax reform, estate planning and investment seminar a couple of weeks ago. It was great. And I was talking with local motivational expert Machen McDonald, and we have decided to do a seminar on running a small business, both mentally and mechanically, on how to run a small business. And I've done this before. I've taught a lot of classes on that, wrote a lot of articles on it. But we thought, since small business makes up, I think, 70% of the economy, small business is the American dream, right? But, you know, it's getting more difficult in the last couple of years. Out from the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, you know, the number of small businesses that were being started were actually going into the negative. In other words, there weren't as many as usually it climbs every year, and it was actually falling. Now, I personally believe that a lot of that is because of taxes. It's very difficult to make a living in a small business, and I talk to a lot of people in small businesses. If I have a painter over my house or contractor, I talk to a tree guy, I ask. I'm always asking, how's your business? What are your problems? You know, and they're always shaking their head about taxes. And, you know, the one of the things that gets me, they always install another 2 or 3 cent tax for something. And they say, well, it's only 2 or 3 cents. And they say, you know, they veil it under clean water. Let's get clean water. And well, 2 or 3 cents is fine, but there's so many 2 or 3 cent taxes. It's hard for a small business. So running a small business is a task, and it's not suited for everyone. Not everyone. Many more people think that they can run a small business than actually can do it. This reality is attested by the fact that 9 out of 10 new businesses fail within the first 3 years, and I think they fail actually a lot quicker. The pitfalls are many. And frankly, I'm always astounded as how many business owners don't get it. They not only fall way short of keeping good track of what's happening money-wise, but fail on the basics. The basics, which I'm going to cover now. Now, because these are basics, they're applicable to almost every business. So obviously, restaurant business is a little bit different. But, you know, the basics are basic to business. And they're applicable no matter what businesses you're in. So, let's see here. Oh, trying to locate where that is. So in any case, the Dow is sitting at 24,534, up 269. So the basics are, I mean, such things as returning phone calls, right? So some of the things I'd always say is that if you don't return your phone calls, you'll have no phone calls to return shortly. And I've always believed that the faster you return your phone calls, the more business you're going to get. It's directly proportional. The faster you return your phone calls, the more business you're going to get. So return your calls, and the faster you do it, the more money you're going to make. Second one is fairly simple. Be nice. You know, people buy from who they like. They really do. If you're a salesman and you're likable, people are going to buy from you. I could never understand when I drop in or call a new business proprietor. They have the personality of a south end of a northbound moose, if you know what I mean. People buy from who they like, so be likable. Some people, I walk into a restaurant and they're actually snotty, or they're arrogant, or the waitress is snotty. I'm like, what? Customer problems. Everybody's going to have customer problems. No matter what business you're in, you're going to have customer problems. The customer is indeed always right. Keep that in mind. Well, he's always right if you want to keep him as a customer. Any business can take money from a person. Any business can take your money. But making a problem right in the customer's mind can win a customer for life. It's like, I had trouble, when he made it right. So now the guy knows if he has another problem, you're going to make it right. Remember, an unhappy customer has a big mouth, and they will use it if you don't make them happy. Word of mouth cuts both ways, right? Make sure it cuts your competitor and not you. And I mean cuts both ways, is that if you're good, they're going to tell people, hey, he solved my problem, or hey, it was good. If he doesn't, it's going to get around, it's going to kill you. Remember, although you may be in a tourist spot, locals are the one that will enable your business to survive or fail. You have to keep the locals happy because they'll refer people. They also go there a lot. Offer a good product and service at a good price. That sounds basic, but boy, that's a tough one. Finding the right price for your product is determined by not you, but it's determined by the marketplace. Most people say, I want to, this is the right price. You don't determine the price. You determine the initial price, but the market determines the final price, or should. You will find out if your price is reasonable and your product or service is good by the amount of votes you get. And I'm not talking about best of. Votes are dollars. When you get dollars, that's a vote. If you don't get dollars, that's also a vote. If you aren't making some of these votes, dollars, the market is telling you that you've done something wrong. It's either price or quality. Don't be stubborn and shut your ears and eyes to what the voting public is telling you. If they're not throwing dollars in your direction, you have to make a change and quickly. Some people would say, I have a great idea, but I can't seem to sell it. Well, then it's not a great idea. It may be a great idea for you, but it's not a sellable great idea. And the last one we see a lot, don't overexpand. And we expand only into strength, not weakness. Obviously, this means start small. I'm a true believer in starting small. Smaller the better. Large stores don't necessarily mean large sales. They mean large expenses. Way too many businesses spend way too much money on starting up. Guy becomes a real estate agent. He buys a new car. New. They get a big storefront. And they stock it with tons of inventory. Big storefronts, new expenses, new offices, new furniture, they install huge expenses, which drives the necessity for you to sell a lot. Sales should drive the need to expand, not expansion drive the need for sales. That means that you only expand when you have to expand. It's like, wow, I'm getting so many sales, they're standing out the door. You don't want to be a bigger office in a bigger building because you're not selling much. And then you say, well, I got to sell a lot to pay for all this. So sales should drive expansion. Your expansion should not drive the need for sales. More often than not, the reason businesses fail is due to cash flow, cash in, cash out at the right time. And those problems start with too much overhead, usually initiated by an overzealous proprietor whose startup plans exceed his pocketbook. They say to have at least 6 months to a year of cash ready to go to fund your business. The last thing you want to do is have it start to take off and you have to close it because you ran out of cash. So expand into strength. Don't expand into weakness. Don't expand into sell more in the face of weak sales. Okay. Sales should drive expansion versus the mistake of expanding, which then necessitate more sales to pay for it. There are many reasons and methods for success and failure in running a small business, and these are only a few. There's a variety of educational resources available on the web on how to run a small business. And it's better to spend more time planning and only proceed when your business is detailed in ink and in every way possible. Detail it every way you can, make a profit and loss statement, how much you're going to have to sell, and plan on getting customers before you make a profit. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and we will be right back to close up the show. My name's Mark Cuniberti. And you are tuned to your community radio station, the Economic Forum show entitled Money Matters since 2005. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today. Remember that discussions in this show should not be construed as individual investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions and do your own research before investing. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only or the opinions of the articles or guests that I may read or have on the show. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, the staff members, or underwriters. Next show is in 2 weeks, and we'll have some more market coverage. Our website, at no charge, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station is moneymanagementradio.com. And also the radio station, nor our website, whatever that is. So thank you for supporting your community radio station. My name's Mark. Have a great day and go make some money. Money.